Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Time fresh. Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. It's time to labrish. This is Margaret, your host, and I'd like to welcome you to the backyard. You know, if you got our promo, you know that we're going to get intoxicated tonight because we're talking about the real thing, and that is the rum. So I hope you are just here to relax and chill. As we say today in America, we're not getting hot, we're chilling, but we're going to be talking about some hot stuff. So welcome to the backyard, and I see I have a caller from 718-379, and if that early caller would like to interact, please hit 1 on your cell phone, but welcome to the callers that are listening online, and those of you who may come by after the show is archived. We just want to welcome you. Every week we're here in the backyard discussing, labrishing actually, about something about our beautiful island of Jamaica. Backyard Labrish is dedicated to celebrate and reminisce the days in Jamaica when we grew up. I said we because most of our callers are expatriates who have left the island some time, and we just like to talk about the great stuff that went on when we were growing up or visited or was there. But for me, it's so much pleasure to do the research and come up with little nuggets of information that I hope you'll find interesting. Anyway, let me start off by welcoming our callers again, and tonight we're going to talk about rum. You know, I remember there was a song that says, "Take me to Jamaica where the rum come from." I remember that. I don't remember who did it, but I see I have a raised hand at 718-379. Our switchboard is a little jumpy tonight. It must be taking a drink because it's jumping all over the place. But I'm going to try to open up the mic if it settles down. And before we go into our rum stories, so hold on, a caller, okay, oh no, we're having a little technical difficulty. I got a email. I think the mic is open now, so welcome, caller 718-379, your mic
Yes, I'm here in the Bronx, the home of the Yankees.
Yes, my lawyer.
Wishing I had a rum right now. It's so nasty weather.
Really? You need some whites.
Yeah, and if I go off at some point, it's because of the lightning and stuff that really nasty weather up here.
Okay, well, we'd just like to welcome you and hope that you can settle in the chair and enjoy the labrish. I know you have a rum story for us, so I see our co-host is on, and she's been looking forward to this particular segment.
That has to be Donna, right?
Right. So, Donna, I want to welcome you. I know it's you.
Oh, my goodness. You guys ought to be ashamed of yourself. You're putting it out there that I'm like a rum person or something, a rum person.
Well, honey, there's nothing wrong with being a rum person.
Not a bad thing. Not a bad thing, Donna.
No, it's not what you think.
I think that what happened was, you know, the Jamaican rum, that's the reason why you all have that, you know, where your hips be shaking so much.
No, that comes from our African heritage. Anyway, welcome, and welcome to our callers online. I'd like to start off by really just sharing some research I found just about rum in general, not necessarily Jamaican rum. But this is from Wikipedia, and it talks about, you know, how the beverage is made of sugarcane byproducts, such as molasses and sugarcane juice, by a process of fermentation and distillation. Anyway, in barrels, special barrels. Now, it says here, which I thought was quite interesting, that the majority of...
I think we got jumbled on that word, distillation, right?
Yes.
Very important to rum, or else you don't have rum.
Right. Okay, it's fermentation and distillation.
Correct.
Anyway, the majority of the world's rum production occurs in and around the Caribbean and in several South American countries, such as Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, and Brazil. And there are also rum producers, listen to this, in places like Australia, Fiji, the Philippines, India, some Reunion Island, I don't know where that is, and elsewhere around the world. In my head, that rum was only produced in the Caribbean, and the other distillers did the other fancy stuff. Not that ours is fancy, too. But did you know that Australia and the Philippines and India produces rum?
Yes.
Oh, Donna, did you?
No, sure didn't.
Oh, you think of rum and you think of the Caribbean, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It says here rum is produced in a variety of styles. Well, we know that, all the styles. But listen to this very important information. Well, interesting, not necessarily that it's important. Rum plays a part in the culture of most islands of the West Indies. Well, we know that. And has famous associations with the Royal Navy and piracy. We also know that. But listen to this. Rum has also served as a popular medium of exchange that helped to promote slavery, along with providing economic instigation for Australia's Rum Rebellion and the American Revolution. Did you know that, Mr. Lee?
Well, if you think, you can imagine that this is entirely possible, because rum is so labor intensive, and from the beginning of the process is actually the cutting of the sugar cane, and just figure out who does that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got to be in most cases it was slaves.
Right. But it says here that the, this is Wikipedia's information, the origin of the word is very sort of fragmented, because there are different stories of how it got its name. You know, one person thought it was from the word, rum is a blunt Anglo-Saxon name. And in 1824, some essay was talked about, you know, that the rum, whatever. And another specialist thought that it was from a gypsy word, meaning strong and potent, which make better sense. And also, another one claimed that it came from... it claims that the name is from the large drinking glasses used by Dutch seamen known as rummers. That was the name of the glasses. So they're not sure how the word rum came about, but it didn't originate in Jamaica, was the whole point.
Oh, well, I go along with the yet another one from the Latin derivation, you know.
Yeah,
right.
And the saccharum is
saccharum. Yeah,
it would be the one that I would go along with, because saccar is the word for sugar.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the rum is arum is the aroma.
Right.
So
right.
If you combine the two, you come out with rum.
Right. Well, apparently there are different, you know.
Yeah, of course.
About how it's
no, nobody seemed to.
Did you get the rambouillon?
Right.
Yeah.
That one too.
Yeah.
Okay, you got
yes.
that one.
Yes, but regardless of the original source, the name was already in common use by May of 1657, when the General Court of Massachusetts made illegal the sale of strong liquor, because whether it was known by the name of rum, R-U-M-M-E, or the name of strong water, wine, or brandy. So, you know, the name was in use here in America in 1657. But
America had its own problems with liquor anyway. So.
Right.
That's a whole other story.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the Jamaican names later in the show, but I just wanted to clear up the old history on the name.
Yeah, well, that's good, because, as you say, a lot of people don't realize that in tropical and subtropical areas that do produce rum, it's not really the Caribbean.
Right, right.
You know? So it's a worldwide thing, and I came to a realization of this way back. I worked for a sugar company, by the way. And we had a little Polish man that provided a sandwich for us. If they had a little corner store and would offer you a cup of coffee or soup if you work late. And one night he was saying to me if I knew all about rum, and I said, what? And I mean, this is a Polish guy with a big accent, you know. And
right.
He's telling me about rum. So,
right.
There you go.
Yeah, you never know. Well, it says here some of the names that for rum are Nelson's Blood, Kill Devil. Well, we know that one. Demon Water, Pirate's Drink, Navy Neaters, N-E-A-T-E-R-S. And Barbados Waters. And also, in Newfoundland, it is referred to by the name Screech, while some low-grade West Indian rums are called Taffa, T-A-F-I-A. I never heard of those names. But listen, there was a precursor to rum.
Oh.
It dates back to antiquity. Development of fermented drink produced from sugarcane is believed to have first occurred early in ancient India or China and spread from there. An example of such an early drink is Brum, B-R-U-M, produced by the Malay people. Brum dates back thousands of years. Marco Polo also recorded a 14th century account of a very good wine of sugar that was offered to him by what is now modern-day Iran. Isn't that something?
Yep.
I was blown away with that, because I didn't know that there was any reference to anything like that that was made from sugar cane. Before the plantation stories, but apparently there were, because they say the Marco Polo thing referred to a very good wine of sugar that was offered to him in what is now Iran. Now it says the first distillation of rum took place in the sugarcane plantation of the Caribbean in the 17th century plantation slaves first discovered that molasses, a byproduct of sugar refining, can be used lost my page here. But apparently, it's the slaves that discovered that the byproduct after the sugar was taken away. Yes, here it is. It is actually the slaves who realized that after the sugar was refined, the byproduct can be fermented into alcohol. And then later they started to do the processing, you know, of the byproduct. They concentrated the alcohol and removed the impurities, producing the first true rums. Now, tradition suggests that rum first originated on the island of Barbados. Now, regardless of its initial source, only early Caribbean rums were not known for high quality. A 1651 document from Barbados stated the chief fuddling, F-U-D-D-L-I-N-G, they make in the island is rumbullion, alias Killdevil, and this is made of sugar cane distilled a hot,
That sounds like an Earl of Rum punch.
Listen to this. This writer described it, this is in 1651, as a hot, hellish, and terrible liquor. Ain't that something? I suppose it was, because it was not, you know, the impurities were not taken out and all of that. We're talking about 1651 now. So that's a long time. Ah, boy, he should be around now to taste what's going on. Now, as after rum's development in the Caribbean, the drink's prosperity spread to colonial America. To support the demand for the drink, the first rum distillery in the colonies were set up in 1664 on present-day Staten Island, Boston. This distillery, 3 years later, they developed a distillery in Boston, Massachusetts. We're talking about 1664. This whole thing started here in the United States. Now, New England became a distilling center due to the superior technical metalworking and copperage skills and abundant lumber. The rum produced there was lighter, more like whiskey, and was superior to the character and aroma of the West Indian whiskey. No, of the West Indies products. Anyone who could afford it much preferred it to the Caribbean product. Rhode Island rum even joined gold as an accepted currency in Europe for a period of time. In other words, they used to trade the damn thing for money.
Of course.
It joined gold as an accepted currency. Donna, were you aware of all this?
Well, you know, it makes sense because, you know, you got to figure, it's just like everything else, whatever the commodity is or whatever, you know, they're going to use it to trade, you know, you look at cotton, how cotton, you know,
right.
That's a trade. And so, you know, they were saying that, you know, they would trade from us, they would trade, you know, products that we had that you know, that they want it. So it makes sense. I think so. You know, get them all drunk and trade something valuable, I guess.
Right. Of course.
Captain Morgan and all those guys, the pirates, would definitely trade drugs of rum for whatever.
Estimates of rum consumption in the American colonies before the American Revolution War had every man, woman, or child drinking an average of 3 imperial gallons of rum each year.
Great.
That's a stretch.
even the children were messed up.
No.
That's what
we're
talking.
We gotta check on Wikipedia, whatever the name is.
That was for medicinal purposes.
Right? You got that right, Donna.
To support this demand for the molasses to produce rum, along with an increasing demand for sugar in Europe during the 17th and 18th century, a labor force to work the sugar plantations in the Caribbean was needed. A triangular trade was established between Africa, the Caribbean, and the colonies to help support the need. The exchange of slaves, molasses, and rum were quite profitable, and the disruption to the trade caused by the Sugar Act in 1764 may have even helped cause the American Revolution. That was really funny.
That's kind of silly.
Oh,
popularity of rum continued after the American Revolution, with George Washington insisting on a barrel of Barbados rum at his 1789 inauguration. Rum started to play an important role in the political system, since the outcome of an election usually depended on the candidate's generosity with rum. The people would vote for incompetent candidates simply because they provided more rum. Well, we know that could happen, not with rum in Jamaica, but we know that, right, Lee?
Yeah, definitely.
They would attend the election to see which candidate appeared less stingy with their rum. The candidate was expected to drink with the people to show that he was independent and truly a Republican. In a Mississippi election, one candidate poured his drinks and socialized with the people. He was more personal, and it appeared as if he was going to win. The other candidate announced that he would not be pouring their drinks and that they could have as much as they wanted. Because he appeared more generous,
he won.
That man won. Because they thought the other one was controlling the amount that he poured.
Yeah.
This shows that colonial voters were not concerned with what the candidate represented or stood for. They were merely looking for who would provide the most rum.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the restrictions on rum from the British island of the Caribbean, combined with the development of American whiskey, led to the decline in the drinking popularity. I thought that was an interesting piece of tidbit.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's it.
Hey. What he did was he learned the open bar process early.
Yeah.
You know, they still use that now, just open bar. So then everybody comes over, and they moved over from, you know, where you have to actually pay for it. They just open the bar up, and the drinks are on me. Just go for it.
Right.
You got it, yeah.
Well, you know, people are still doing that, you know, when they want to be popular. The drinks is on me, you know.
Yeah.
The next round is mine, you know.
Yeah.
But here again it says the association of rum with the Royal Navy began in 1655 when the British fleet captured the island of Jamaica. With the availability of domestically produced rum, the British changed the daily ration of liquor given to the seamen from French brandy to rum. While the ration was originally given neat, N-E-A-T, or mixed with lime juice, the practice of watering down the rum began in 1740 to help minimize the effect of the alcohol on the sailors. Admiral Vernon directed that the rum ration be watered down before being issued, a mixture which became known as grog, G-R-O-G. While it is widely believed that the term grog was coined at that time in honor of some cloak that the admiral used to wear for rough weather, the term has been demonstrated to predate his famous orders. So he ordered that the thing was watered down, you know, so the sailors, I suppose, wouldn't get that drunk.
Yeah, but if you used to go and see some of those pirate movies,
mm-hmm.
they would pay off the seamen in different rations and 2 pints of grog.
Right.
You know.
But listen to this. Rum became an important trade good in an early period of the colony of New South Wales. The value of rum was based upon the lack of coinage among the population of the colony and due to the drink's ability to allow its consumer to temporarily forget about the lack of comfort available in the new colony, because, you know, it would make them not know how hard things were, I suppose. The value of rum was such that convict settlers could be induced to work the land owned by officers of the New South Wales Corps. Due to rum's popularity among the settlers, the colony gained a reputation for drunkenness, even though their alcohol consumption was less than the levels commonly consumed in England at the time. So in other words, it took less to get the convict settlers drunk so they could work for nothing. Now, when William Bligh became governor of the colony in 1806, he attempted to remedy the perceived problem with drunkenness by outlawing the use of rum as a medium of exchange. Listen to this. In response to this action and several others, the New South Wales Corps marched with fixed bayonet to the governor's house and placed Mr. Bligh under arrest. The mutineers continued to control the county until the arrival of another governor. In other words, he was going to limit their drinks, and they took over.
Well, maybe that was when they coined the expression, give me a Bligh.
It could be. I thought that was really, really, to me, it was quite interesting. And I remember, Donna, if you remember this, you might remember it too late, when we were doing, I think it was earthquakes in Kingston, they talked about how the owners of certain establishments would have to take a drink with everybody who came in to trade. And in one session, this poor owner of the shop was so drunk that he went and asked the bookkeeper if he could take over for him, because they had to have a drink.
For the figures.
Yeah, with everybody that came in the shop. Mm. So that's a little history about rum itself.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued at the fact that it went way back, you know, from the 14th century, that people were brewing up stuff in Marco Polo days.
Yeah, well, you know, as a little boy in Jamaica, of course, kids weren't. We didn't. My father didn't drink,
mm-hmm.
but he had access to the rum from the estates, and he would, of course, bring it from my grandmother's to anoint our head.
Yeah.
You know, that was the big thing there, and this was the real stuff. This thing, if you pour some of that rum on your hand, you probably have no skin left.
Right.
That was unadulterated rum. But it occurred to me as I was thinking about this topic that there is a real social aspect to rum in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And you could align that with Jamaicans. When I was growing up, it was very big on playing dominoes.
They still are. Mm-hmm. I understand from my
And rum was an intricate part of this this process. You know, the more they played a domino well into the night, into the early morning, the more rum they consumed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
okay.
this would be the ruination of a lot of families.
Families, yes.
Because on a Friday night, the guys would collect the boys, and they would meet wherever they meet, and the wives wouldn't see them again till Saturday, or if they see them at all, you know, for that weekend, depending on how the game went and how much rum they would consume. And of course, the white rum, as we know it, was very cheap compared to You would have to be an intellectual and a little bit elite to be drinking whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was rum, and rum was cheap enough to for the locals to consume as much as they wanted.
Right.
So that was a very social thing growing up. People would, the only reason I know a little bit about rum was that if my parents, for instance, my mother would send me to the Chinese shop to buy bread. Let's say it was on a weekend and a Sunday when the shop was closed, I would have to walk through the bar.
Yeah, because the bar would be open.
The bar would be attached on the other side of the shop.
Shop, and the bar would be open on a Sunday.
And the bar would be open.
Interesting, very interesting.
So, in going through as a kid, you know, you observe things. You know, the drunks are and the regulars at the bar.
Right.
And you know, and you sort of read labels and all that. All that in the process. Now, you know, the rum that I can remember people using at that time, I mean, not the white rum, but the little more elite rum was the Dagger series. You remember that, Madge?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Three Dagger rum.
No, first one Dagger was deep. The middle grade one was two Dagger.
Mm-hmm. And then three girls, top of the line.
The top of the line, right.
It's right.
And suddenly came a new brand, which was the Appleton Special. And for a while, just before I left the island in the early 50s, there was a scarcity of the Appleton because it was like overbought, you know. This now became the elite rum to serve when you were entertaining,
right?
And they were selling and producing Appleton that was not matured yet. So I think the government cracked down on them, and they had to put aside the rum for a while to let it mature. You know, rum has to mature when you're going to sell rum for at least a minimum of 2 years.
Uh-huh. Yep. So, and now they even have 21-year-olds, you know.
Of course. Well, the research I saw was a minimum of 2 years up to 50 years.
Uh-huh.
So now we're talking like a brandy rum if you go up into the years like that. But the point I'm making is that you had several different brands of rums. The white rum that's the most popular and still is the Rio Nevio brand.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the little Polish man, I didn't mention the brand that he talked to me about at the time yet, because I wanted to dovetail it into this little discussion here. He mentioned Meyer's rum.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And Meyer's rum is an elite kind of rum that we used to export only. You couldn't get Meyer's rum in Jamaica.
Oh.
And Meyer's rum originated in 1879. So all of Europe had Meyer's rum before we knew about it.
Before the locals, you're talking. But it was but it was distilled there in Jamaica.
No. Yes, of course.
But it was exported.
Correct.
Ah, interesting.
So, you know, we live and learn.
Oh, yes.
And the Meyer's rum has a totally different taste from the rums that we are used to drinking.
Right. Well, I have some information here that might you know, account for that. You know, why taste of the different rums are different.
Yeah, I have it too. Yeah.
Yeah, but I see here where Appleton Rum, Appleton Estate has a website with some interesting information. And according to them, the history of rum in Jamaica says rum beginnings. In the 15th century, Spanish settlers, of course,
introduce sugar cane, the cultivation, and the art of distilling the rum to Jamaica. With fertile soil and a perfect climate, Jamaica proved to be ideal for the grass-like sugarcane to flourish. But it was in the 17th century that the distilling spirits, that it was really, it became very popular. And they said Jamaica gained the enviable reputation of being the source of the finest rum in the world. Now, it could be that Myers rum you're talking about.
Yeah.
When they were exporting it and the locals were not really exposed to it.
Yeah. And this Myers rum, you know, is a blended rum, of course, like you have whiskies that are blended.
Mm-hmm.
And the processing of it, you have the lighter Myers and you have the darker Myers, depending on what they put in it. You know, the caramel is combined with the to color the rum, and of course the standard of the is 40% by volume, so it's a 40% rum, which is much better for the European taste than...
Oh, yeah, their palate is a little more refined.
Correct. And when the tourist would taste the Appleton rum, which is a much higher alcoholic content, they would grimace a little bit on the palate, you know?
Okay, well, that has changed because the Appleton is now the number one. But they have a very interesting, for any of our listeners online that might not have known about our history, Jamaican's history, their website have just a very little interesting little synopsis of how we're a melting pot. It says here, for centuries, Jamaica has welcomed settlers from all around the world. This small island has played host to the Amerindians who discovered it, to Europeans who fought to own it, to Africans forced to call it home, and to Asians, Indians, and Middle Easterners searching for a better life. Each group carried with it a story and tradition, throwing everything into Jamaica's melting pot. After centuries of brewing, all have blended together to give the island its rich history and heritage, an international smorgasbord of legends, cultures, and customs, all displayed right here against the background of Jamaica's beautiful mountains and valleys. I thought that was just a very good explanation of who we really are. You know, all the different cultures just melting together to be one out of many one people.
Well,
I just like how they put that together.
I would hasten to say who we really were.
Mm-hmm.
Because the society has stratified somewhat, and since the period of time we're talking, since we left.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean that a lot of there's been a high degree of emigration, people leaving the island for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. We call it a brain drain.
It caused a brain drain, and
mm-hmm.
and of course it temporized the mixture of the people.
Now, in other words, what they're talking about is what Jamaica used to be.
Right. Well, I just wanted to make that distinction.
Right, is what Jamaica used to be.
Yeah.
And there's no neat way to put it. You know, the Jamaica that exists now is quite different from the colonized Jamaica that we knew.
Yeah.
Quite different. I'm not saying what's good or bad. I'm just saying what is. You know, it is quite different. So, you know, there's no easy way of getting around that. It just is what it is. But the National Library have a very good account of you know, some things that I thought would be important to the rump stories. It says in 1893, close to 90% of the 31,000 acres under sugarcane cultivation belonged to sugar estates that operated their own mills and distilleries. At the time, there were some 148 distilleries located throughout Jamaica. By 1948, there were only 25.
Since I was just thinking about this evolution as you were before, as we were talking. Go ahead.
Great minds think alike. Since then, the number of distilleries
because
has dropped.
It's a segue into what is really happening now with
That's exactly how I thought I'd sort of merge it together.
The liquor industry is changing quite, so go ahead.
Right. We're talking in 1948, now there were only 25. Now, since then, the number have dropped a further five.
Yeah.
Yet, with improvements in technology, the quality of rum produced has grown. Jamaica currently produces the widest varieties of rum in the world. We have more varieties than any other place on the planet. In fact, the island has the capacity to produce up to 50 million liters of rum annually. Jamaican rums are presently sold in over 70 countries around the world. Now, the Jamaica Excise Duty Law, number 73 of 1941, defines rum as spirits distilled solely from sugarcane and molasses, or the reuse of sugarcane at the strength of not exceeding 100%, 150 proof spirit. So, in other words, that is where our overproof rum comes in.
Yeah.
Now, this is a Jamaican law. You know, I know over here the alcoholic level cannot be above a certain amount. Now, and it tells you a little bit about how rum is made. Yeah, Donna, are you familiar with how rum is made?
No, I'm not.
Well, I'll just for you and the other Americans and perhaps some Jamaicans who might not know. To make rum, molasses, the thick syrup resulting from sugarcane juice crystallized by boiling, is allowed to ferment. Now, I remember this word lay. They call it the wash, which is what comes out. You know, has approximately 60% on alcohol, which after distillation produces rum as a sharp-tasting, clear, colorless liquid with about 80% alcohol. White rum, popular on the local market, is basically this product distilled to 40% alcohol. Golden rums come from the aging of the clear liquid in oaken cast and the absorption of the liquid from the oak. So it's actually the material that helps gives the color. The darker, heavier Jamaican rums come from combination of molasses and skimming from the sugar boiling vats stored in the oaken cask. Now, the fermentation of other substances in the molasses can enhance a rum's flavor and aroma to make it different. You know, that's how the different flavors lay and the different tastes.
Yeah, of course, and it's like each rum concern, each rum company has its own recipe, so to speak, for making the rum. And that is well guarded. It's top secret. You're not going to know exactly what went into that rum to make it what it is. And the other thing that I since we're talking about this evolution into a more refined product, they've gone into some of these liqueurs and the cream rums cream drinks.
Oh yes,
Which are derivatives of the rum. So while we don't locally, they consume more of these products than the rum itself now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
fancy.
Fancy.
But it says here that the rum industry development can be traced back to 1825, when a wheelwright living in St. Anne opened a tavern in a residential area of the bustling seaport and commercial center of Kingston. His name was John Ray. Aware that Kingston was home to one of the most renowned theaters in the New World, the Theatre Royal, which since 1770 has played host to countless English touring companies who made their first call in Kingston en route to Boston and New York. Ray built his tavern right next door to this theater. It was appropriately called the Shakespearean Tavern, the area known then and now as Parade, was a popular meeting place for locals. The parish church and a large market were also nearby. By 1860, Ray had become a successful rum merchant, and he brought his 22-year-old nephew, Charles James Ward, into the business. You know, we're talking about names now. You know, now we know the name, J. Ray and nephew. That is how it originated. Isn't that interesting? By 1882, he had made Ward his partner, and the business was known from then as J. Ray and nephew. Soon after, Ray retired, and in 1870, when he died, Ward assumed full control of the business headquarters at the Shakespearean Tavern. Charles James Ward was a gifted entrepreneur, and his tenure marked a period of dynamic growth for J. Ray and nephew. Ward transformed his heritage, a tavern and a liquor dealing concern, into one of Jamaica's largest commercial enterprises that enjoyed local and international acclaim. In 1862, at London's International Exhibition, J. Ray and nephew won 3 gold medals for its 10, 15, and 25-year-old rums.
And you're funny, that was another rum, you remember Gold Seal, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that went into obscurity, but maybe that was a result of what happened here, as you were describing.
Right. Now, J. Ray and nephew rums also won awards and prizes at the International Exhibition in Paris in 1878, in Amsterdam, in 1883 in New Orleans, in 1885, and in Jamaica's own Great Exhibition of 1891. Isn't that interesting? That it dates back, I mean, with them having all this acclaim to way back then. Now, in 1863, J. Ray and nephew's headquarters moved from the Shakespearean Tavern to larger premises on Port Royal Street, conveniently located near the wharves in the heart of Jamaica's commercial area, a major bank and a post office. By the time of Colonel Ward's death in 1913, less than a decade after he bequeathed the funds to rebuild the Theatre Royal that was destroyed in the earthquake of 1907. It was renamed after it was rebuilt. You know what the name was? It was renamed Lay. You there, Lay? Hello? Oh, he must have dropped off. He said he would. But Donna, and to the rest of our readers that might be familiar with, we have a very famous theater in Jamaica that's called Ward Theater, W-A-R-D.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was named after this Colonel Ward, who's part of the J. Ray and nephew. You know, it's all combined. But what I saw here was this entrepreneurial person seeing a need and filling it.
Yeah, yeah.
That is one of the largest companies in Jamaica.
Mm.
Now, the company had also secured the local distribution rights of a number of well-known brands, some of which it still represents today. So as Leigh was saying, they might have bought out this Myers and some of those other ones. But anyway, shortly after completing the acquisition, Linda Brothers and Company Limited purchased the Appleton Estate in St. Elizabeth and within a year expanded the estate's factory and distillery operations. The Linda Brothers kept the brand name, and under their management, the company grew, adding two additional warehouses to store and age the rums, a bottle washing machine, and an electric bottling line to the Kingston operation. Now, because they acquired this, the plantation now is where the big merging come in. Located in the fertile Nassau Valley on either side of Black River in southwestern Jamaica, Appleton Estate is the oldest and most famous of all Jamaica's sugar estates. Its origins go all the way back to 1655, the year when the English captured Jamaica from the Spanish. Appleton Estate was an established rum-producing sugar plantation in the year 1749 and has been in continuous operation for 2.5 centuries. Today, Appleton Estate comprises a total of nearly over 4,614 acres with 3,707 acres in sugarcane cultivation. In addition, the estate has its own sugar factory and rum distilleries, both of which rank almost amongst the island's most modern and well-equipped. The factory can produce up to 160 tons of sugar per day, and the distillery has a production capacity of 10 million liters of rum on an annual basis from both pot and column stills. An average of 80% of the rum is exported. Now, during the World War II, whiskey was hard to come by, and after much experimentation and attempts to produce a rum that would serve as a substitute, Appleton Estate Special, a smooth, light, and fragrant rum that proved extremely popular with Jamaicans, was born, and it was renamed Appleton Special in the mid-1900s. Now, Leigh can relate to this. This is what we're talking about, Donna, when we say that at first the rum was too harsh for the foreign palates.
Mm-hmm.
So they found a way to modernize it and, you know, sort of, I suppose, water it down, as we would say,
mm-hmm.
so that 80% can be exported. And that's why they're the number one, voted the number one rum in the whole world, this Appleton.
Oh, okay.
They're renowned all over the world. I mean, there's rum being produced in other places.
Right.
But the Appleton Special is number one. I said that Leigh's back on with his, on his cell phone, I think. So our loyal listener from the Bronx, if you'd like to interact with us, just put up, hit one, or if there's another listener, we have a couple of callers. And our switchboard online is just jumping up and down for some reason. I think they're having some technical difficulties at the headquarters. But if you do want to interact with us, just hit one on your telephone, and we'd be glad to pipe you in as long as we can click the mic and open it up. So let us know if you want to talk. But for people who are familiar with the names of the Jamaica distilleries, they can relate to the story that I just spoke about. I'm going to open up the mic to 646-749, I think it is. I have a raised hand. So bear with me while I try to
hear you again.
That's you again.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you. So did you hear about how all this merging came together?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too when I found it. Now, in 1957, Percy Linder's two sons sold the company to a syndicate, including some of the principal shareholders of LaSalle's DeMercado.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1989, the Leicester Mercado Group acquired J.R.A. & Nephew as a wholly owned subsidiary. Today, recognizing the international potential of Appleton Jamaican Rum, the company is focusing its efforts on growing this brand on the world market through the development of international marketing and distribution channels and the production of new Appleton brands. They have so many different names now, Lee.
Yeah, well, of course, Leicester's Democrata was one of our largest and most influential corporations in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, they were very important in tobacco and cigars and all of that stuff. But they are a conglomerate, so why not rum as well? And, of course, they amalgamated with Appleton.
Right. But what's interesting here is J. Ray & Nephew continues to operate a bar on the site of John Ray's original Shakespearean tavern. Isn't that something? After all these years.
Yeah, I would like to know where that is.
Well, it said it was near where the Ward Theater is.
Ward Theater, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that little tidbit just really stimulated me.
Yeah.
And to know that they have been getting awards from 1862.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, I've personally been to a lot of the West Indian and Caribbean islands that produce their own brands of rum.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're able to compare their brand with our brand, the Jamaica brand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this could be a little bit prejudicial, but the only one that came close enough to Jamaica taste is the Barbadian rum. All of the other ones have a different taste, so to speak, you know. So,
right.
I mean, yeah.
But that brings me to the use of our rum, beside being a social must for a domino game. I want to do some rum facts. This is from the library, the Jamaican Library information. It says here, recently the companies of Edwin Charlie Jamaica Limited, you know them? Distributors,
yeah.
Which include David Fonzi and Company. They used to do fine wines, spirits and liquors. Sangsters and Ray and Nephew have come together to form the Ray and Nephew Group, owned by Lasses Demacada, a local rum distribution such as National rums continue to operate independently. Rum is stored and fermented in handmade oak casks, Donna, for your information. And Appleton Estate operates a 45-minute rum tour where visitors view a short documentary on the history of the estate. They see a 100-year-old donkey-driven mill and they have samples of the sugar cane before it's made into
molasses,
what we call wet sugar, of course, and they get a bottle of rum. So, Donna, you have to take a trip to Jamaica, and one of the things you have to do is go on this tour, okay?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I think that was agreed on last week already.
Okay, all righty.
I can say that I did have rum punch at your house, and I had some, I think, rum cake.
Yeah, okay.
I never had rum punch before, and so, you know, it was really...
You're breaking up for some reason.
Yeah, she is.
Must be your phone? Donna?
Uh-huh.
Can you change phones or something? You're very fragmented. Anyway, in the meantime, I want to tell our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish, and tonight's rum which is...
Did anybody else want to talk about rum?
Beg your pardon?
Out there? Did anybody else want to talk about rum?
I've asked. I see some no, we have some callers, but no raised hands, and I know sometimes people just like to listen, but we ask you to bring some rum stories to us tonight. But I thought it was interesting because I remember some names that people would refer to people who overindulge.
Rummy.
The brew. What? Tell me some you can remember, Lay.
Well, one is a rummy, yeah.
Although a rum head.
Well, maybe a rum head, but if you know a person that drinks a lot and you want to tell somebody about it, you said that rummy.
That's a rummy.
Yeah.
Well, I remember that there were some people who I know, people in my family would refer to them as a drunk already. You ever heard that?
I never heard that one, but that must be a far more descriptive of the kind of person you're dealing with here.
So listen to this, Donna. What to you would that mean? A drunk already? Tell me what that implies to you.
They're through already. It's over for
right.
them.
Right. In other words, they can't hold the liquor. You see, they take one drink and they're chatting foolishness.
Oh, okay.
Drunk already.
I would have interpreted that a little differently.
Right, yes. Well, and I'd like to ask our callers if you can think of any names that people used to refer to people. Now, I spoke to someone who wanted to be on the show but couldn't be tonight. She said that in her part of the country, they would call them a rum bumper. I never heard that.
Yeah, I heard that one, yeah.
Rum bumper, yes, she said.
Mm-hmm.
She knew drunk already, rum head and a rum bumper. And they would, if the women are discussing a man that they know, I suppose, is a drunk already, they would say to the woman, don't listen to him, he's in his rum. He's in his rum. That means that go on.
In his waters.
Yes, 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 yes. But I remember it as being underwaters.
Underwater, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, underwaters.
Yeah.
But I came across a very interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about what we use the white rum for. Besides putting it in rum cake and drinking it on the rocks or with a chaser, as we call it in Jamaica. Is that how they refer to when they water down a drink here, a chaser?
Yeah.
No, well, mixed
like a
rum
shot.
Drink.
And you take a shot and then you take a chaser like a beer or something behind it.
Mm-mm. Well, in Jamaica, when we order it with a chaser.
Rum and ginger.
It's like you put something in the rum. See the
rum and ginger is a good chaser, or
right.
rum and tonic, or rum and soda.
Right. Okay. A rum and water.
A rum and
chaser
water.
Too.
A rum and water it shows you that you're dealing with a real rummy.
Or because he don't want anything to he just want the rum a little less
little
potent, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
he wouldn't put soda in it. In other words.
Right.
Okay. Now, just like every corner have a church here, I think in a lot of the small villages, you have to have a bar. Every village have a bar, as you say, Lay, even those that are open on Sundays.
Yeah.
The shop might not be open, but the bar is open.
The bar is open.
Right.
I'm not sure if that was legal though. I mean, of course.
Oh, well,
it doesn't have to be legal.
I
don't remember. I don't remember, but I was too young. But
I don't think they had any restrictions. I don't remember either.
Yeah.
But I came across a very interesting Jamaican website today. It's JamaicanRecipe.com, and whoever this is, I think is a gentleman, was talking about rum.
Cooking with rum?
Right. And some of the things that he said we call it, let's try a mixed drink and give it a name. Call it Dopey Conqueror.
Dopey Conqueror,
yes.
That's a good one.
He's very comical in his writing because he says, you know, you can give, Jamaica is the only place where you make up your own name.
Right.
You know, you make up your own name of what you call your drink because
yeah,
you order what you want in it.
I would go to these all-inclusive places, you know, and the, of course, the bar, the drinks are free on the arrangement,
mm-hmm.
and you would never know what the guy is mixing up for you. I mean, it was his concoction, you know.
Ah.
So you're right about that.
But he wrote here, this is very interesting, and I might not understand this. Some of our American friends may not, but I know the Jamaican, the diaspora will. He said, overall, no other rum in Jamaica can beat Jamaican white rum. It outsells all the others without trouble. Another potent Jamaican rum is a no-name brand we call Jankrabati or Kulu Kulu. C-U-L-L-U. The workers remove rum from the vat before cleaning it at the end of each year. This is not a for sale product, mind you, because it is not inspected or cleared for sale or consumption to the public. I happened to get some Kulu Kulu when I was an older teenager from a man who worked at the local sugar mill. Have you ever heard of Kulu Kulu?
I've never heard of the name, but maybe that's what my father was bringing home to his mother.
Ooh.
You know?
So this writer said, I seriously would not recommend this spirit to anyone.
Well, I have a story about
that. Celebration drink. I had one sip, and that's all she wrote. It went down my throat like lightning and fire. I could hardly breathe for a brief moment. Enough of that, I thought to myself.
Yeah, well, I have a little story very quickly on that. After a hurricane, and my father had the lumber mine bring up some lumber and whatever he needed to fix, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he didn't have a drink to offer. The only thing he had to offer the guy was some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the guy thought that he was a macho and a rummy. So I'll take it, you know, give me.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy took one sip of it and almost spit it in my face.
Ooh.
I mean, as fast as he could put it in his mouth, he spit it out because, I mean, this will take your tongue out, you know?
That's right. This is what he was talking about, is Jankrabati.
Right. And then the next thing is, the guy had never been to the house before, but he knew where the faucet for the hose was outside in the garden.
Oh, my goodness.
Put his head on there and start drinking some of that water.
Wow.
Now, what is it? What is this? This is rum, or what is it?
Well, remember what I said. It came from, it actually is, he said it here, he describes it. He says, this is a not-for-sale product.
Ah.
Because it is not inspected or cleared for sale or consumption to the public. I happened to get some from when he was a teenager, from someone who worked at the factory. So apparently they clear the vats. This is rum. The workers remove this rum from the vat before cleaning it at the end of each year.
This
so it's like skimming the top off.
This of the rum.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It comes directly out of the vat.
Yeah.
But I like the name Duppy Conqueror. So now here, let's talk about some of the folk beliefs. Now, Jamaican white rum is a fend-off. Is used to fend off unwelcome spirits, Duppy, as we know them.
Okay.
He says, oh, yes, Jamaicans won't admit it, but it's true. One would go out at night in the backyard, sprinkle several drops of Jamaican rum in the dark, and walk backwards into the house. This practice is to keep evil spirits from entering the house. The ritual seemed a bit odd at the time, you know, but who am I to question anyone about his or her T-shirt.
But this was widely done, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of households did this on occasion. And if
right.
you had somebody in the if you had a family member that died,
mm-hmm.
they would let's say on the anniversary or something, if people got together, they would sprinkle some of that
on nine-night rituals.
On a nine-night ritual, they'd sprinkle some of that on the ground for the duppy.
No, listen to this. He says, since gambling is an integral part of our culture, some people pour small amounts of rum on the ground before they buy the lottery ticket to help to increase their good luck. And if they don't win, well, drink the rest of the rum. They have no one. They have no other choice. When someone is ready to build a house, whites play a very important role in the pre-construction practice. After the bank and local authorities approve the building plans, the future homeowner pours three capsules of Jamaican rum in each corner where he or she is going to erect the building. This ensures that the good spirits will protect the workers while they work and bring good fortune to the future inhabitants of the home.
You know, I personally believe that all of these things were manufactured by the people that were distributing the rum.
It's like,
you know, and it's almost like, you know, how we say that, you know, any excuse to buy a dress, I think it's any excuse to drink rum.
Right, listen to this. Jamaican rum whites, of course, is the only strong drink that we use at nine-night celebration. Nine-night is the ninth day after a person is deceased. We drink coffee, eat bread, and play dominoes for eight straight days after someone passes. The night, we eat fish, drink rum, beer, play dominoes, and sing solemn songs in long meters back then. Nowadays, we do the same except for the long songs. We play reggae dancehall music instead. Oh, the interesting thing about a nine-night celebration is that the amount of water birds that turn up just to drink rum, and then you better not run out of rum or else. In other words, they don't come for the 8 nights, but on the 9 night they turn up because they know that is the rum night. And those people are called, there you got it, water birds.
Water birds, okay.
So there is where you say the man is on the waters.
Okay.
At the time there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on rare and dead practice, why did I use the word dead? That young men used to swear on it that if you soak raw peanuts in rum and eat them, your male member will remain harder when it's time to indulge in some horizontal endeavors.
Would you mind repeating that?
No, I won't. I'm reading from a website.
No, that's all right. I have to go into the archives to find that.
So, you know what he's referring to when he said dead?
That's like organic Viagra.
Okay, yeah. Young men used to swear that if you soak raw peanuts in rum and eat them, your male member will remain harder when it's time to indulge in some horizontal endeavors. Well, two of my friends and I tried eating raw peanuts soaked in rum. No reports, please. I will chalk it up to insufficient cooperative dump.
Well, look, somebody just gave me a bag of raw peanuts, but I don't have the rum, so.
Well, am I to consider that something is dead, that you're trying to revive?
Don't go any further on this.
All right. Jamaican rum is
a
medicine.
I don't have the rum.
Medicinal aid, too. If you feel like you're about to have a cold or flu, pour a handful of rum into the palm of your hand and then wipe your face with the rum. Wait 5 seconds and then place the same hand over your nose. Because close to your nose, and gently inhale the rum. This will help to remove some of the virus and other little critters from the sensitive areas of your body where you're most susceptible to develop a cold.
That could be good for the swine flu business.
Right, we need to get some white rum. if you already have the flu, make an 8-ounce pot of Jamaican black coffee, add 1 ounce of Jamaican rum, and drink it. Do not.
What about the lime in that?
We always put honey and lime in ours. Wrap up under a blanket, and you will sweat out that flu in no time.
Yes.
Used to walk barefoot when we were children. Occasionally, we had to pick thorns, maca, from our feet at the time. To avoid small wounds getting infections, we roast a small shaving of green banana on a wood fire in a Polish pot cover and apply it to the wound with Jamaican white rum. I never heard of that. Did you? Have you ever heard of that, Leigh?
No.
Green banana leaf with white rum for a wound. The rum helps the wound, and the green banana helps the healing. If rum is not available with the banana, we use kerosene instead.
I've heard about the kerosene, yeah.
Really? And for our listeners, you're listening to Backyard Lavish. We're getting liquored up here. You're listening to Backyard Lavish on Blog Talk Radio. We get together here every Wednesday just to lavish about things Jamaican that we might have known of when we were growing up or discovered since we're older and away from the island. So we welcome you to our show and hope you'll join us every week. I see we have quite a few callers online. Nobody's raising their hand. So I'm going to continue to give you some things from this Jamaican website. It's jamaicanrecipe.com. We used to walk, we did that already. The old folks made a pain reliever from rum that had a dual purpose, but they would never admit it. Some of them add green ganja to a bottle of rum and let it soak forever and apply the soaked rum to joint pain whenever needed. I think they take a sip of it every now and then without telling anyone why it would finish so quickly if food is food for thought. What he's saying that this concoction that they would make would finish quickly. And he never knew. Now he knows he's older. He's talking about when he was young. Now that he's older, he perhaps think that it finished that quickly because they would take a sip now and then. Now, he has a paragraph here that is opposition. There's opposition to rum drinking in Jamaica from some small quarters of our society. Among Christians, the general stance is to distance oneself from any rum drinking activity or show even tax support for anything close to it. Some Christians even refrain from rum drinking, so they say, because it is a sin. Some preachers preach full sermons about the dangers of alcohol and its use. They admit that they welcome the medicinal applications in certain circumstances, however. Now, Rastafarians are famous for calling Jamaican rum the devil's soup. Have you ever heard that term, anyone? The devil's soup is what is referred to as the real Rastafari, from the real Rastafarians, among other names. They make no bones about it. Excuse me?
So they don't drink?
Apparently not. They make bones about it that using such a potent mind-altering drug could never be righteous way to enjoy oneself. That is subjective, and he says, enough said. In conclusion, you should enjoy Jamaican rum to your desire, whether you are using it as a traditional remedy or for party drinks. Just like anyone else, moderation is the key. Any need to overindulge is a sign of something more serious for which rum may get the blame. However, if your plans for having a little fun with the crowning king of rums, be considerate how you indulge in it. I thought this was a very interesting
Who's the author of these things?
This is the writer on JamaicanRecipe.com, which is a website that I stumbled upon.
But you don't have a name.
His name was not on the website. It's just he's the owner of the website, apparently. So
you
that's
know,
giving
you know what I found interesting credit. Is that they found that, you know, they would avoid, you know, any type of support for the rum. But, however, for medicinal purposes, you know, we can, you know,
okay.
sometimes do it. But, you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, a couple of things. One being that, like, for my family, they would say that, you know, if a child or something, even, you know, children or whoever had a fever or they were sick or coming down with a cold, that you would give them some brandy, warmed up brandy, and you wrap them up. And, like, for instance, my mom used to put, like, you know, Vicks on my chest and nose and then and I'd have a sip of something. And but, you know, it was like you have the brandy and it would, like, bring the fever out of you. And then, you know, like when people, and you can even see it now with more with like rap people, that rap stars or whatever, they'll say, you know, I'm going to, you know, toast to my friend. And most times it was like somebody who had, you know, gotten killed or died or whatever, and they were going to leave it. So what they would do is like they would have whatever their drink was that they were drinking, they'd have a whole bottle of it, and they would, you know, they'd take a sip, and then they would pour some out and say, you know, this is a toast to my friend or my whoever passed away, and then they would, you know, complete the rest of it, you know. And all, but, you know, for like, what, you know, I come from the country, and in the country, they have what's called moonshine, where it's made from like potato, you know, potato skins and stuff like that. And it was, you know, illegal for a long time. You know, if you were going to buy some type of distilled beverage, you had to buy it so that it was taxed through, you know, just like, I guess like marijuana or anything else that they were talking about legalizing, that you had to buy it so that it was, you know, taxable. And so, but so you had all of these people that, you know, had been doing this since, you know, my godmother used to be like the moonshine person.
Oh, like that's where it came from.
You know, like
that's
a moonshine person, you know.
Before you heard about rum, Donna.
So people would leave, and I'm going to tell you, you always knew the men would leave from the church, and they'd go over to her house and buy their moon, and you already knew that. You start hearing them already being loud. And but, you know, but it wasn't, but in the country, you know, there wasn't a package store, a liquor store, anything like that. There was only like a little bitty family-owned kind of convenience store, you know, but there wasn't anything else that was out there. I mean, you know, you had to pump light in just to have some light. So, you know, it was like that was the, you know, she was the distiller for that area.
All right.
And on my understanding, it was pretty good stuff, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Like what was coming from the vat at the end of the year, the moonshine.
When you were saying that, because people would say, that stuff, I mean, it'll burn a hole in you, you know. I mean, it tastes like fire, you know, call it moonshine, or they would call it white lightning. They felt like it's like lightning going down your throat and stuff.
Right. Well, also this writer at this website talked about the fact that, you know, the real Jamaicans, the natives who hang out at the watering holes, you know, the rum bars, don't drink fancy drink, and they don't usually put, for the most times, you know, mix their drinks. But he says here that most local bars sell a Jamaican rum as a 1 ounce serving in a small glass with water as a chaser. But sometimes one may choose to go bold and add soda to the drink of rum, preferably Coca-Cola. You remember, rum and Coca-Cola is a big drink. Used to be down there. However, there are no rules for taking a drink of Jamaican rum at all. You see, the high potency and quality with which this clear, colorless spirit is made will cause you to make your own rules to keep your sobriety. Really, saying that to say this, there is a special group of rum drinkers in Jamaica who have a few rules, if any, when it comes to drinking whites. So we can call it white rum, that is. The group is not really a group as such, but individuals who frequent the local bars in the quest to get complimentary rum drinks from the other rum patrons. We call them waterbirds as bar members. Now, the idea of buying free drinks for the local waterbirds may seem a bit strange, but in my neighborhood, it serves a good purpose. Whatever, whoever gets the water bird drunk first is in for a treat, because the water bird will provide all the entertainment for the night. He will show you how much of an expert he is at anything, as long as you keep the Jamaican rum coming his way. He will quote from Shakespeare. He will tell you the secrets of solving the world's problem. This is one of the strangest human transformation you will ever see. Through Jamaican rum, a man who has never left the island but is able to tell you about all the world's ills and how to take care of them. I saw water birds offer medical advice, athletic instructions, dance lessons, legal interpretations, English comprehensions, and recite poetry under the influence of white rum. One expert all wrapped up in one water bird. Real serious stuff. So, in other words, the first person to get the person drunk guarantees that for the whole night, the whole bar will be entertained. Isn't that something? I thought that was very special. He's a very interesting writer here. But
yeah, it sounds like it.
I want to, we have 3 minutes left, and I want to ask, or we have some callers online, if they have any rum stories or any remedies that they know rum used to be used for, to just hit one on your telephone, and I'll be happy to pipe you in to the library. That's what we're doing here. It's just a casual conversation. We're not politically correct ever, or, you know, we're not into politics or what's right or wrong. We're just here to relax in the backyard and talk about the things we know and search up some things we didn't know and reminisce about growing up on our beautiful island of Jamaica. We're not there, but our hearts are in many ways, I should say. But one thing someone told me today, that in their part of the country that they grew up, they would soak camphor squares. That she said it came in squares, and they would have it soaking in some white rum. And they would put it in the mold of the baby's head, you know, that soft spot in the head, if they believed that the baby was exposed to chills or might be coming down with a cold, and that it worked every time. She also said that they mixed it with olive oil. I never heard that before. Rum and olive oil, and they would use it for joint pains, which would be similar to what this writer was talking about, that people would soak the rum in the weed and use that for joint pains. But if anybody else know what we used to use the rum for, please let me know. Leigh, did you remember anything else that we did with the rum? Medicinally, I mean.
Oh, medicinally. Not medicinally, but of course they used to soak all the fruits for the Christmas cake.
Christmas
yeah.
pudding, as we called
Christmas
it.
Christmas pudding.
And yeah. And those were, in the old days, were steamed and not necessarily baked.
Right.
But that's still being done, and people, you know that you will have, it's going year long. And Donna, that's a cake you never have to refrigerate.
Oh.
And it can last, you know, like for people's anniversaries. You had the top of a traditional wedding cake in Jamaica is the black cake made of fruit soaked in the white rum for perhaps a year.
And this can put you down to, Donna.
Oh, yes. You can get drunk off of that cake.
Yeah.
Okay.
But traditionally, or I think that some people used to save the one that was the little one that was on top, just to eat at their anniversary. So I suppose they didn't eat much the night of the wedding because they didn't want to get too stoned. I mean, drunk. But by the first year, they could use some liquor in the cake, even if they weren't drinkers. It's funny how some of the church people who don't necessarily wouldn't drink, but they would have the rum cake. Nobody has, in my day, nobody had a wedding cake that was liquor up. It didn't exist.
Let them pray a little more.
Yeah, or do other things a little more, for that matter. But, you know, Donna, there was never a wedding cake that I knew of that was not made with pure liquor. So I want to, I hope that our listeners enjoyed our little rum stories. Lay, we only have a few seconds, and Donna, we only have a few seconds to say goodnight to our callers. So if you have anything you'd like to share with them, let's do it.
Well, I just want to say the next time you find yourself, you know, drinking a little rum, a little bit too much, and, you know, you think that, you know, it's going to help you to maybe eat something, that's not the case, just take a cab and spend the night at a friend's house, you know, because that rum, is, especially if you get some of that good stuff from Jamaica, is going to set you on your bottom. At any rate, just want to say to everyone, thank you for joining us. Make sure you go to Backyard Labrador and maybe leave some of the things that you know about Jamaican rum. Back to you, Ms. Margaret.
Thank you, dear. And again, I want to thank all our callers for calling in. We have quite a few people on the board. I know nobody wants to talk to us, but you're always welcome to interact in the Labrador. That's what we're here for. We're just sharing and hopefully leaving a footprint about what used to be when we grew up, and we're discovering some things long before our time that relates to some of the things, some of the customs we have even until now, because I think that there's some of the things, although Jamaica is a lot like America now because we have everything there that is here in America, but I think some of the traditional things are still the same, and you're hardly going to find a wedding cake or a Christmas cake that's not totally soaked in rum. Now, Donna, not only do we soak the fruits in rum, but we pour the rum over the cake after it's baked.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a Jamaican rum cake, fruit cake?
Now, what did I have at your house for the holiday?
I don't remember. It's possible. I don't remember. I know I always have it. I had it.
You had so many treats there. I tried to try, you know, a little bit of everything. I know that that rum cake was rather popular with a lot of the younger people. I know that.
It must have been one of the, it was Christmas time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, then it was the rum cake.
Yeah.
Oh, that's mostly what we use it for. And the rum punch, of course. And if any of our callers are not Jamaican, I would suggest if you go to a Jamaican party and there's rum punch, don't think it's a normal punch. And it would be very easy on it if you're going to be driving, because it sort of comes, it creeps up on you because it's really so tasty. And in they have something which is called planter's punch that used to be very popular in my day as a mixed drink in Jamaica. And it was very potent because it was made with the Jamaican rum. But I suppose it originated from the days of the plantation, you know, when they blended different things to make the planter's punch. But now most Jamaicans go with the white rum, and there's a formula for it, which one of my girlfriends, I usually have to call her up because it is one of sweet and two of strong and whatever. She knows it very well. And if you follow the formula, and I'm sure you can research if you're interested, the formula for a Jamaican rum punch online, because everything now is online, and enjoy some wonderful Jamaican rum punch. And we will see you next week as we research some of our island's history and talk about some things of back in the day. So thank you for joining us here in the backyard. Good night.
Good night from the Bronx. Bye-bye.
Okay, and good night from beautiful Georgia, my new home. Donna?
Good night.
Good night, and good night to all our listeners online and calling in. Bye-bye.